Most of us grew up in the tri-state area going to Yeshiva League games. And picture the best basketball player in your high school. And certainly that person gets a lot of attention. They have a certain status, a certain fame in their high school. But when they go up against the best player in the league from another school, you can't even compare the two. That other player, the best player in the league, whoever it is at the time, is someone who everyone's excited to watch. Everyone's excited to see the dribbling moves they do, to see if they're going to put up 30, 40 points in the game. Sometimes it's because they're very tall, they're very fast, they have a great shot, combination of those factors usually. And it's always exciting to see. And in our minds, we're like, wow, this is the best basketball player I've ever seen in my life. And this is even though, of course, we might watch the NBA, but like, this is the person we see in front of us. This is the best player we've ever encountered. And in reality, that player, the best player in Yeshiva League, is at best going to be going on, most likely, to a Division II school to play basketball, more likely to a Division III school where YU is part of D3. And if you think about it, listen to the following. There are 4,511 players in Division I basketball, which means that that person, the best player we've ever seen, is, and this is that person probably going to be in Division III, so there are 4,511 players better than him in Division I. Could imagine how many players are in Division II, of course. And last year, in December, there was an article that said that at that time in the NBA, in December last year, there were 444 players who were put into an NBA game, who recorded minutes in the game. Out of the 444 players who entered an NBA game by last December, 443 of those players were in either in Division I schools or overseas or high school before they entered the league. And there was only one player in all of NBA by December of last year, throughout the last year's season, who played even 1 minute in a game who was in Division II. Only one player was in Division II. So, of course, no one was in Division III. No Division player at all even touched the court. But the fact that it was just one person. And it's crazy to think that the best player we've ever seen in our lives doesn't even come close to a Division I player, let alone even a Division II player, and the best Division II player, only one of them, only one person in Division II played a minute in the NBA by last year in December. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu informed Avram about his plans to destroy Sodom, so Avram pleaded with Hashem to reconsider. And we're told, Vayigash Avram, Vayomar, Avram approached him, like Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Yehuda when he approached Yosef. So Avram approached Hashem, after his pet tzaddik in Russia, he says, Hashem, would you kill a righteous person in the midst of all the wicked people? Ula yesh chamishim tzaddikim besocha ir. Maybe Hashem, maybe there are 50 righteous people. Don't destroy Sodom and Amorah just because there might be some great people there. There might be 50 righteous people there. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, agrees, and they continue the interaction of deciding how many people would there be in order for Hashem to save Sodom and Amorah? Rav Sorotkin in his Naim LaTorah is medayik on the words Besoch Ha'ir. Why does Avraham specify that there are 50 righteous people in the city? Of course, Avraham's talking about Sodom and Amorah. And if Avraham says, you know, if there are 50 righteous people, then why would he destroy? He's not saying 50 righteous people in the world. 50 righteous people there. Why does he have to say Besoch Ha'ir? So Sorotkin says as follows. He says, Avram knew that the people living in Sodom were far from tzaddikim. But he was asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if there are 50 righteous people who are tzaddikim besoch ha'ir, like amongst those people, they're considered righteous. They're not objectively righteous people, but compared to the people of Sodom, these are the upper echelons, let's say, of the people in Sodom. 50 really good people in Sodom. If there are 50 really good people in Sodom, please consider not destroying them. Rav Sorotkin gives two brief stories to explain this idea, to elaborate. And he says he was once on a train, and there was a group of kids, pretty irreligious kids in front of him, and they were talking, and it was almost going to be Yom Kippur, and these kids had no plans of going to shul, no plans of fasting on Yom Kippur, and they were specifically discussing getting together to eat, to drink, and to gamble on Yom Kippur. And they were discussing and deciding who was going to be part of this, who was coming. And so they started dropping some names, and then one of them says, you know, is so-and-so going to be coming? And the other guy started laughing. It says, that guy? You think that guy would come with us on Yom Kippur? That guy's a tzaddik. He wouldn't come on Yom Kippur. And Sorotkin says, on a separate occasion, a short while later, he went to a very prominent boys' high school, boys' yeshiva, and he went to inquire about a certain boy who he had a relationship with. And when he asked about him, when he asked the Rosh Hashiva, the Mashgiach, so he was told that the boy is not doing well, and he doesn't have much Yirah Shamayim. So when someone says this, someone doesn't have much Yirah Shamayim, so like that's a pretty intense statement. So Rav Sorotkin asked, he says, what specific things are going on with him? You could assess that he doesn't have much Yirah Shamayim. And they told him, he said, this boy, unfortunately, he's been reading the newspaper. Says, that's it? He's reading the newspaper? Yeah, he's reading the newspaper. He wants to be involved in the world, in the secular world. Modernity. That's not a recipe for Yer Shamayim. And Sorotkin thought to himself that the Rasha of the yeshiva who's reading the newspaper is far above the tzaddik of the people on the train. And we tend to think about people's religious level as something objective. But in fact, really, there's tremendous subjectivity to a person's level in Ruchnius, in Yiddishkeit. And in reality, a person is judged by their own actions on their own level. Rav Eliyahu Dessler describes this concept in what he calls the Nekudas HaBechira, the point of free will. He says, picture a ladder and rungs on a ladder. The bottom of the rungs are things that are the lowest level, the lowest things for us to be able to overcome and accomplish. And the top of the ladder are things that are above us, let's say, things that are very difficult and beyond. So let's say, for example, I hope that none of you woke up this morning and had the thought, you know, I kind of want to murder someone. I hope none of you had that thought. If you do, I suggest getting some help immediately. But that's never happened. And imagine the debate that would follow through, where your Yetzer Tov would say, no, you can't kill them. You can't. And then the Yetzer Hara comes back and is like, no, do you know what, remember what they did to you yesterday? You have to take them out. Come on. Yetzer Tov's like, no, think straight. Come on. It's only been a day. They're really a good person. Think about what they did last year, the nice thing they did for you. We've never had that dilemma, that fight between the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, about whether to murder someone. And for some of us, obviously everyone listening is on their own level, but maybe a more realistic debate is you wake up Shabbos morning, you're pretty tired, you didn't have a good night's sleep, and your Yetzer Tov is like, come on, get up, let's go to shul, let's be there on time. Your Yetzer Hara is like, come on, stay in bed, it's cold out, you know, it was in the 20s this Shabbos morning, it's not worth it, stay in bed, you'll go in half an hour. The Yetzer Tov's like, no, come on, this is the opportunity, just get up, it'll be great. That's a more realistic debate that we have. And then there are things sometimes that are above us, that are beyond. And like I said, this, of course, is for a person on their own level. And for some people, you've never had a Yetzer Tov that's like, you know, let's go, let's do Shnai Mikra. Let's do it, let's learn the Parsha twice, Pshat, and once with Rashi or Unkelos. Yetzer Hara is like, nah, don't do it, come on, it's not worth it, you'll hear the laning in shul. Yetzer Tov goes back and is like, come on, you gotta do this, it's a mitzvah, do Shnai Mikra. For some of us, we've never had that debate, the dilemma, because it's too far beyond us, it's not where we're holding right now. And Rav Dessler explained that the real schar that we get in life is the point of what the Nekudas HaBechira, the point where it's realistic, where we have that struggle, we have that fight. The second example that I described, the case of murder, Baruch Hashem, we're getting schar for not murdering someone today, but it's a very easy thing for us to fulfill. And for things that are far beyond us, you know, we might not be losing out so much. We, of course, Mirat Hashem would love to get there, but we're not losing out much for that. But the things where we have the greatest reward, And potentially the greatest point of failure and punishment is the nekuz habechira, the things that we struggle with. And the goal, says Rav Dessler, is to overcome that, to have the Yetzer Tov overcome the Yetzer Hara. And as you overcome the Yetzer Hara, you go higher on the rungs of the ladder. And then the next test comes, and maybe you've achieved and you've accomplished going to shul on time. And then maybe if we're within the davening realm, maybe it's, you know, let's focus. Let's make sure to have kavana for everything we're going to say. Whatever it may be, but you continue to go up. And there's a story told of the great Reb Zusha. Reb Zusha was laying on his deathbed, and he was crying. And his student said, Rebbe, why are you so sad? Do you know how many mitzvos you've done, how many ma'asim tovim you've done? Very soon, you're going to be getting tremendous schar, tremendous reward in Olam Haba. Reb Zusha responded to his students. He said, but I'm scared. Because when I get up there, when I have my judgment before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not going to be asked, how come I wasn't as great as Moshe Rabbeinu? They're not going to say, why weren't you more like David HaMelech? But says Reb Zusha, I'm afraid that God will ask, Zusha, why weren't you more like Zusha? And then what will I say? What will I respond to them? And it was such a pachad for him to feel as if he didn't live up to his potential. As great as he was, that's what his feeling was on his deathbed. And each and every one of us, we're responsible to try our best in life. We have to stop looking over our shoulders and comparing our actions to the people to our right and to our left. Sometimes we're looking at someone who's a little less religious on the outside, and it makes us feel good. You know, I'm doing more than that guy. Hashem has to love me. Sometimes, probably more likely, we compare ourselves to someone who's doing more than us, and we put ourselves down. You say, oh, I'm a nothing, I'm worthless. But really, the only place to look is inward. And to ask ourselves if we're overcoming those challenges in our nekudas habechira, in those points of free will, in the greatest challenges and struggles that we have between Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara on a daily basis. Are we overcoming those? Are we continuously climbing up our own ladder? And may each and every one of us be zocha to continuously climb and to become the best individuals we're capable of being. Or Be'ez Hashem, after Me'ev Esrim, we're going to be asked, were we the best people, the best individuals, not compared to others, not compared to Moshe or David HaMelech, but compared to ourselves, to our potential? Do we live up to our potential? Did we accomplish as much as we could have? Be'ez Hashem, we should say yes. I was able to overcome, I was able to achieve, and I was able to accomplish.